Welcome to the podcast service of the Massachusetts Climate Action Network. Visit us online at massclimateaction.net or friend us on Facebook.
Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of August 29th, 2016. Today we're joined by our frequent guest, Mr. D.R. Tucker. How are you doing, D.R.?
Good. How are you doing?
Very well, very well. So, D.R., some very interesting and curious news came across the wires, as we say, this week. Or maybe I should say the internet tubes this week. I saw an article that talked about it's more than an idea. It's actually a plan and a rocket shot and federal government approval to send a mining mission to an asteroid. Mm-hmm. And this first mission will go off, fly out to this asteroid in 3.5 years, and then pick up a few ounces of material, right? Mm-hmm. And fly those few ounces of material all the way back to Earth for analysis. Right? Mm-hmm. The implication of that, and the clear, if you read the article, clearly there's a lot of interest in space mining. That is to go to the moon and get whatever's on the moon to find asteroids between the Earth and Mars and mine them for water as way stations along the way. Mm-hmm. And there you go. So did you see that article, DR?
Yes, it was a fascinating and kind of morbid article in the New Republic talking about what's known as the OSIRIS-REx, which is going to be launched to an asteroid called Bennu. And basically the goal here is to mine the asteroid for precious metals and minerals. So it's literally drill, baby, drill in outer space. And as the New Republic notes, quote, several for-profit companies are currently jockeying for position in this fledgling industry, unquote.
And it said that's because the private companies could do it because the United States, in the midst of the Cold War, basically got the whole world to sign on to a treaty that no nation state can take over an astronomical body, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that exactly. No one can claim the moon. It's a property of all mankind, except when the private industry gets there.
Mm-hmm. What did the police say? Giant steps are what you take walking on the moon?
Well, I guess, so there's that. And, you know, you have people, engineers, very smart people with basically dollar signs in their eyes. They're going to fly off to an asteroid and make money. Right, bring mm-hmm. back. What was the show? What was the movie with Sean Connery where they were in some mining
Outland.
Okay. Anyway, I guess for me, so why bring this up on a show about climate? And I guess the reason I wanted to discuss it is because the human impulse to go to a different asteroid and mine it. And basically, shall we say, pillage this, to go to the moon and dig a hole and bring back what's there, is so human, but it is very much in keeping with the human attitude we have right here on the planet, where we can, you know, pour pollution into the atmosphere because, you know, it's there. It all seems to me part of a continuum, and that attitude of, you know, we can fly into space and destroy an asteroid is what we do. That's what humans do. I mean, can you phrase it as a question of the human impulse and where our knowledge of ourselves, how it all fits together?
It's, you know, about 50 years ago, Jim Morrison of The Doors did that song, When the Music's Over, and one of the lines was, "What have they done to the earth? They've ravaged and plundered and ripped her and bit her." And now it's like, you know, 50 years later, we're still doing the same thing. That lust and that greed for more and more and more, it just seems to never stop. And it's like, you know, when some people see Pope Francis's Laudato Si and they're moved by it. And some people see Laudato Si and they throw it right in the trash, basically.
I mean, I think that humans, you know, humans have been farming, right? And that's what, and that's basically exploitation of the planet, right? At some mm-hmm. level, right? Mm-hmm. There are other species. I mean, there are ants that, you know, have, I've read somewhere, they have like other bugs that are slaves and they milk the bugs to feed their mm-hmm. own, you know. So, I mean, it's an impulse of living things to exploit their immediate environment. Mm-hmm. And so you can't really, you can't say it's a bad thing. But mm-hmm. on the other hand, going off into outer space, let me just say this, is that going to an asteroid and drilling an asteroid, I mean, there's a lot of asteroids out in outer space, right? Just mm-hmm. like there was a lot of land west of the Mississippi, right? Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of asteroids out there. So you're not going to do that much damage to the universe, but it's more a question of what it means to be human. And mm-hmm. do we want to be building a future, like a long-term 100,000-year future that requires this continuous expansion of exploitation of the environment? Or should we be looking for some way to live more what's the right word? Not continuity, but in some sort of synergy with the place where you are. So you're not, mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, it's one of these big questions, right?
When I mentioned the sort of the morbid implications of that New Republic piece, and you talk about, you know, the prospect of going to an asteroid and trying to exploit it for resources, you know, when we talk about, you know, potentials of space travel and the prospect of life on other planets, you know, if we were to go to another planet and we found resources that we could use back here on Earth, and there are other forms of life there, would we do to that? Would we essentially try to engage in a form of cleansing of that other form of life? You know, would it literally go to that level of the things that were done, you know, in our country and in so many other countries to sort of get rid of anybody who was getting in between you and the resources you wanted? Would we do that in space as well?
It's like the
bloodiest form of sci-fi, if you think about it.
Well, I was going to say, we're definitely in the realm of science fiction, right? But mm-hmm. what it, I mean, so you look at a movie like Avatar, right? And even the article about space mining makes reference mm-hmm. to Dune, which I guess I've never read. It was driven by, I mean, all, as everyone knows, I mean, science fiction is not about the future. It's all about what we are now, what it is to be human in mm-hmm. some sort of extreme circumstances that seem exotic, right? Way off in the future, mm-hmm. but there's still human people dealing with these issues. And so the idea of what, you know, what happened to the, in Avatar, where the poor people who lived on the planet were being exploited. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And again, it comes back to, what does it mean to be human, right? How do we define humanity as being exploitive, or do you try and define humanity as being something else, or some middle ground where, I mean, it's almost impossible not to exploit things if you're a living creature, but how much should you exploit things?
This goes to, going back to Laudato Si, this goes back to the whole discussion that has been had for years about the two different interpretations of religion, one interpretation of the Bible that says that we are to live with other living things in harmony with other living things, and another interpretation of the Bible that says that we are to exploit and kill and take whatever we can from the earth.
Put the earth and subjugate the earth and go forth and multiply, kind of thing, right?
And when you have that sort of divergent view of morality on the earth, you'll extend that into the universe, won't you?
Oh, yeah. Well, and I think that in the case of the United States, is a very clear example that mm-hmm. the westward progression across the United States was driven by a concept of virgin land. That, I mean, mm-hmm. always just over the horizon, there was open territory. Of course, all the Indians had been killed for various reasons. But, I mean, there was open land that mm-hmm. you could exploit. And when you ravaged one place or became unhappy in one place, you could always go west, young man, and find mm-hmm. a new place. And mm-hmm. that psychology is still stuck in the American psyche. And of course, at the turn of the century, when they declared the American West closed, right, mm-hmm. left a whole lot of psychic energy floating around looking for something to conquer, right? I mean, mm-hmm. in many ways, this all rewinds to the human capacity for exploitation without thinking, and which, of course, is directly connectable to climate, I guess. Mm-hmm. As, you know, using the atmosphere as you know, an allegedly pristine dumping ground that we can use till we run out of it, and then we'll find another one. Speaking of finding other ones, DR, so the other interesting astronomical news this week is that night owls stayed up all night, turned their telescopes towards the sky for many years, and they found a new planet called Proxima B, I think is the name of the planet. And the thing that's interesting about this planet is that it's only, in quotation marks, only 4.5 light years away, and it appears to be a planet, a rocky planet, that could have water on it, which, of course, is the immediate idea that there could be life there on this thing. Only 4.5. Now, the reason that 4.5 light years is interesting, and again, if you read the articles, they say 4.5 years ago, I guess Taylor Swift was singing about how, you know, we're never going to get together. And if you were on Proxima B listening to the radio, you would just be getting that signal now. Right, that's how long it four light years is. It takes the radio waves 4 years to get there. That's an awfully long way. And the article goes on to talk about basically at the best drive, space drives that we are capable of thinking about, it would take something like 80,000 years to get to this place. And you find out it's not habitable. But I mean, for me, again, it comes back to the question of the uniqueness of the planet, and people don't appreciate what we've got, right? They're willing. I mean, did you see the article, DR?
It was a fascinating article, and again, the morbid implications of the article, because New York Times noted, quote, scientists are working off computer models that offer mere hints of what's possible. Conditions could be Earth-like, but they could also be hellish like Venus, or cold and dry like Mars, unquote. Well, again, you know, when I talk about morbid implications, could we see a scenario where people say, well, hey, there's a potential backup planet? You remember how Ed Markey always used to talk about how we don't have a planet B. What if somebody looks at the story and says, hey, well, maybe we do have a planet
B. We have Proxima B. Hell, you know? Yeah, well, I mean, I think that if you don't think about it, the idea that there's a planet there and it's only 4 light years away, say, okay, well, if we need to, we'll send some humans there and we won't all die off. Even if planet Earth dies, there'll be a colony of humans. It's like, ain't going to happen, right? I mean, you've seen these articles of people that are willing to take a one-way trip to Mars. Did you see that? That was sort of in the news last year, people volunteering to be on the first, you know, no-return trip to Mars. Man, that takes some moxie, I would say. Well, I think that the philosophical question is more philosophical than environmental, is what it means for the human species, or at least some of the human species, to have the impulse to go out and basically exploit these objects out in space. I don't know. I think that it is something that the human species has to learn how to not tame, but to manage. To manage properly. And I mean, that's such a big question. I'm sure if there's any philosophers listening, please tell us, please explain this to me in a better way. But there you go. So there's that, DR. Tell me, did anything else of interest happen this week in the climate world?
There was a fascinating report in the journal Nature about a group of researchers that have determined that human-caused climate change as we know it did not start in the 1880s. It may have started as early as the 1830s, that was the first time we saw the fingerprint of carbon pollution caused by the Industrial Revolution messing up the climate. It's caused a fair bit of controversy because a number of climate scientists, including the acclaimed climate scientist Michael Mann, they've raised issue with this study, noting that, you know, some of the methodology is a bit questionable, shall we say. But it's still a fascinating, fascinating study, and it goes to show you that no matter when our pollution started causing this problem, we need to knock it off and stop it.
Right, and just to put the whole thing in context, I mean, the carbon levels in the atmosphere were not very much influenced by the wood burning that had gone on by the few humans, right, up through the 1600s, the 1700s. The population was growing. They were all burning stuff. But it wasn't until the late 1700s and then into the 1800s that they invented the steam engine, and they figured that find out they could burn coal successfully and started to do it in a massive way. And in fact, if you read the literature, a steam engine was invented in order to pump water out of a coal mine. So it was kind of this synergistic thing. I mean, the steam engine that dominated the world in so many ways was originally designed just to pump water out of a coal mine so they could work there. But I mean, that was the beginning. The beginning of the rise of the amount of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere was sort of tails with this interval. And I guess this article is arguing about exactly when that fingerprint happened. And I guess I'm the take-home lesson I have is that even you know, there are arguments between scientists even now over climate issues, right? No one's arguing that climate change is not real, but these guys are looking at each other saying, no, no, you're right, you're wrong, and it's a healthy scientific debate, right?
Yes, definitely, definitely.
Well, I think that the, I guess the other news that I saw was that there were, the Obama administration has released the opportunity to drill for natural gas off the Gulf. I mean, there were some leases that were being auctioned off this past week. Did you see anything about that, dear?
It was very controversial that right around the same time that President Obama visited Louisiana and took notice of the damage caused by the extreme flooding, the Interior Department had a lease that took place, had some oil and gas leasing that took place.
An auction for the leases.
Yes, the auctions for the leases taking place in the Louisiana Superdome, which, as Amy Goodman of Democracy Now! Noted, was, quote, the very building where thousands of displaced residents in New Orleans sought refuge during Hurricane Katrina 11 years ago, unquote. So it's like, you know, the disease and the cure, if you will.
Yeah, all in one place.
It's to have the same guy who there's no doubt that he is led, but you see the intractability of the problem, that the notion of stopping these leases is still considered in some quarters too radical.
Right.
In fact, stopping the leasing stopping these sorts of leases is part of the thing that has to be done in order to avoid future, mammoth flooding in places like Louisiana.
No, I agree with you. I mean, it's for all the good that Obama has done, and I do. I mean, he is faced with these sort of political challenges that make it very hard to do probably the things that you'd want to do. But then I guess it's the climate hawk's job is to make him, right, the old classic thing about make me do the right thing that FDR said. I don't know. I mean, the whole situation down there in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, with the unprecedented events, and you know, if you're listening to this podcast, you know that these are climate related events.
Exactly.
What are you going to do? DR, well, look, I guess we'll tell our listeners that they can catch up with the links to what we talked about at the blog. It's at massclimateaction.org/blog. You can find us on Facebook at /massclimateaction, and you can listen to us directly on your smartphone using Stitcher or TuneIn Radio, and of course, you can find us on iTunes. So, DR, we're going to close where we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, and because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the United States put a price on carbon. So thanks, DR, for being here. I appreciate it.
Thanks.
I got a quick trip to Proxima B, so I'll see you next week.
Okay.
Same for everyone else. We'll see you next week. I'll let you know how things are on the hellscape of Proxima B. Bye-bye.
Thanks for being with us. And until next time, be green.
Very cool. Ha 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 ha.